This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
This morning. Good morning. It is Thursday, the 6th of May, 2021. You tuned in to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. That must mean you're on the clock with Erin Green. On the clock, we engage organizations, institutions, social and cultural leaders, and ordinary people to better understand the impact of public policy, private sector development, and emerging social and consumer trends. On the clock, we have conversations that help us understand and navigate a rapidly changing Bahamas. Today's show is brought to you by the Department of Inland Revenue. And you can also tune into the show on guardiantalkradio.com, where we're streaming live audio and video. You can listen on TV on Cable Bahamas Channel 969 or Flow Channel 612. Or you can download the Guardian Radio app for your Apple or Android smart devices. And listen to our audio feed or watch us on our video feed right there on the Guardian Radio app. You can text us on the Guardian Radio text line. That's 422-GR96. That's 422-4796, and that's powered by BTC, Standard Text Rate Supply. Or you could call us at 323-6232 or 325-4316 or 325-4259. But good yawning this morning. What a wonderful day. Listen, at least what time it is. It's just 10 o'clock. It was a wonderful day before I walk in the studio. But I'm sure by the time I get out the studio, the sun will be blazing down the place. So I want to sort of make this note. It's kind of a reminder, right? Sometimes we don't really, while we're in the heat, we don't really get a full sense of the impact of the heat and the weather on our bodies. What I went through yesterday was amazing. So my advice to you today is constantly or frequently, when possible, pause. Get a sense of where your body is, where your temperature is. Drink water regularly. If you're waking an office with a water cooler, now is the time to take advantage of that peak and use that water cooler. Drink regularly. If you work outdoors, please drink water regularly. Right? Cover the back of your neck and your head. Don't leave it out exposed to the sun all day. Take stock, because what happens is we tend to work through the heat, and then when we're done, we're just fatigued. And we're retaining all of that heat from the day. And some of us end up with a little bit of heat stroke, right? And some of us can end up with a little bit of heat rash. Buddy, it's only me. It's only me. We got a whole summer of this to go through. So take your time today. Take stock of your body, how you're feeling. Drink lots of water. For my beer drinkers out there, my alcohol drinkers, drink with moderation. For every alcoholic beverage you have, make sure you have the equivalent volume of water alternating between drinks. And when I say alternating, don't take that as permission to drink half a case of beer today, please. It's hot. Don't mess with that. Also, in the news today, before I get to my guest in The Guardian, Moultrie says executive playing games with people's lives. I would like to recommend to The Guardian a reprint. I wouldn't say a retraction, but a reprint. They spelled that word, a word in there incorrectly. A few words. Political culture and political class, right? Because the thing, it looked like it should say executive, but really it should say political culture and political class playing games with people's lives. You see, they'll be talking about this concept of the separation of powers, right? Like how these powers work in conjunction with each other. No one having more authority than the other, right? Or certainly over the other. But there is a space in there where there is no separation of powers, right? Like, there's a moment where we could look at you and say, hey, to be honest with you, all of you are playing games with the people's lives, right? All of you. Here's the second thing. Why are we so stuck in the personality cult, personality politics? Right? I had earlier said that if I had to pick a side, I would pick Team Moultrie in that moment because it appears as if his agitation is for the purpose of ensuring a safe environment for his staff and all the staff, right? Because they our staff in the House of Assembly, right? But in that moment when the speaker stood up and said that all matters are resolved, but did not indicate to us what A, all matters were, and B, how they were resolved, I realized that they think this don't have anything to do with me. And so, perhaps it's important for us, the people, to say to them, the political class, those who perpetuate the political culture, and those who think they are in control, but are being led by forces greater than them, right? All of y'all in that space really need to have a reassessment of what your role in governance is. Also, this thing that I have been asking for years since the last election and will continue to interrogate political candidates on, it's very simple. Do you understand the fundamental differences between politics and governance? And do you understand how to balance the two? Do you understand how to balance your obligation to the Constitution and the rule of law with your obligation to the people of the Bahamas, with your obligation to your party, with your obligation to your constituents? And if you are lucky enough to be invited to sit at the table, your obligation to the cabinet and the prime minister, right? I started asking that question from, I started the show. And here we are now with a clear, clear example, right? The manifestation of a political class that does not understand these fundamental principles of governance in our system and are unable to perform, let alone talk about, the balance of obligations that they have to deal with, the balance of duties that they have to deal with on a daily basis. I don't even want to really get into the politics of it. I don't want to get into the politics of it, but I want to make this simple point. It is up to the people. It is up to us to begin to construct public discourse around politics that clearly distinguishes what is political and what is governance. And we need to create a framework through which to engage the political class and the politicians to ensure that we can have clear, coherent, right? That's like a clear, easy to understand conversations with our politicians and members of government about what they are doing. It's up to us. We got to govern ourselves. We got to be the change we want to see in the country. But more importantly, we have to create a model for younger Bahamians. We have to show them not just how it's being done, but how it can be done. These are the real big things. We got to model different behavior for the sake of our country, for the sake of our young people. Anyway, I got a surprise guest in studio. My guest co-host, Darwin Thompson, just walked in. Which is awesome because my actual guest today, because he was my guest co-host, is Mr. Joseph Darville, right? Human rights advocate extraordinaire. And I know you used to work with Rights Bahamas and IOM. And so it's a wonderful combination. I figured who best to have in studio with me to talk to Mr. Joseph Darville but Mr. Miguel Thompson. Good morning. To you, Mr. Thompson.
Oh, morning, Aaron. Sorry about that.
Hey, no day.
Good morning. How are you doing this morning?
I'm good, thank you. To my audience, we got Mr. Joe Darville on the line. He's zooming in all the way from Grand Bahama. Mm-hmm. I want to say, let's be patient. The Zoom platform is a little difficult to work with on radio because of the delay. But in the time of COVID and the pandemic, the Zoom platform is the safest platform and the safest way to continue doing this show. So we're going to have a lot of Zoom conversations until this matter is resolved. But we're going to go to a break. And then when we get back from the break, we're going to have the phenomenal, because I only knew Mr. Joseph Darville as a human rights and environmental rights advocate. Mm-hmm. But he is a phenomenal Bahamian. We'll be right back after the break, Bahamas. Stay tuned to 96.9 FM.
Bill, take advantage of our Real Property Tax Forgiveness Program. Bring your account to zero and receive a 50% discount on your outstanding tax and surcharge past 180 days. Or get a payment plan. Make a 25% deposit on your outstanding tax, receive a 100% waiver on the surcharge, and pay the difference within 36 months, interest-free. Contact the Department of Inland Revenue at 225-5778 or email us at rptforgive@bahamas.gov.bs. Offer ends May 31st.
Hello, sir. Your credit card bill is due. Hello, sir. It's time for your monthly loan payment. Tired of creditors pounding at your door? Sign up for a debt consolidation loan from Fidelity Bank and consolidate your debt into one low monthly payment. What's more, you'll also earn interest on a built-in savings account. The pandemic has curbed many freedoms, but at Fidelity, our focus is to help regain your financial freedom. Visit a branch or speak to Fidelity Bank at 356-7764. COVID safety measures in place at all branches. Fidelity, we're good for you.
Boy, why you look so mashed up, like clothes at the washer?
No, boy, just a hard day, boy.
Hard day? What happened? The breakfast lady ran out of tuna and gritsy.
We need to start joking about everything, you know. This serious, boy. This real serious, boy.
Boy, what's serious? Tell me.
All right, well, today, boss gave us boy one big contract. And nobody else get a chance and nobody say nothing.
Boy, you know that ain't right. You know government contracts ain't supposed to go that way.
Yeah, but nobody saying nothing. Boss man just tell people to sign the papers. Then he sent me to meet his boy downtown and collect this envelope.
You need to tell somebody. You need to become a whistleblower.
You know I's a real man, but I never blow no whistle. I be drunk all my life in Junkano.
No way. A whistleblower is someone who tells people what they see when they see something wrong happening at work.
But I ain't no whistleblower, and I ain't no snitch. I still wait there, you know.
But ain't nobody gonna know it's you. All you gotta do is call Crime Stoppers, or you could text them from inside the Crock Crime Bahamas app. They don't ask about you, and your call goes straight through to Miami, so nobody know you is. And if you text, your message get mixed up like Kong Salad.
Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9. FM. Fresh news, smart talk, quality.
Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. That means you tuned into Guardian Talk Radio. My name is Erin Green, and you are on the clock. I got a quick ad before we get to the show. Exempt, making customs simple. Bahamas Customs Baggage Declaration app is coming soon. Fill out customs forms while traveling. Search for rates of duty, calculate duty before you land, and so much more. This app is easy to use and helps you clear customs even faster. This ad was brought to you by Bahamas Customs Department. And now back to the show. My guest today is an environmental rights and human rights advocate. He is one of the first and the most well-known advocates in the history of the country. Mr. Joseph Darvill. Joseph, are you there? Ah, boy. Okay. So, I've given Mr. Darvill another means of communication, and if he's listening via radio, I hope that he understands that the Zoom link has dropped, and I need him to call in to the studio. I see we got a call on the line. Mr. Darvill, good morning.
Good morning, good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing absolutely fantastic.
Thank you for joining us today. If only they know how late I was up last night trying to run this telephone line from Nassau to Grand Bahama.
we're not that bad. you could have flown it over on the, brought it over in the mailboat.
Or the Chicchani Express.
Chinese Express, absolutely.
And you see this beautiful story in the paper about how we're steps closer to controlling our own airspace, right?
Oh, my God. It's in bounds. We can control everything that happens to our ocean and our land. We will become an independent nation at last.
Yes.
You know, because we're still being treated as a little chattel, a thing that, you know, slaves worked on and foreign entities, you know, they like to come in and still carry on the kind of modern piratical activities in our own country.
Yes,
sir. You know, without any due cause to us and how we need to save this for future generations. But, Erin, it's great to hear your voice, man. I'm always keeping in touch with you. And, you know, you got such an incredibly profound mind, but an even more generous and magnificent heart. So, congratulations for all the work that you do, particularly on for those people who are challenged because of the lack of wisdom of other people in this country.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And sometimes what it is that we just don't know who it is we have around us. Like we never are exposed to the breadth and the wealth of work that regular and ordinary people have been doing right next to us. Mm-hmm. Right? And so, and I say that to say this, when you sent me your bio, right? I committed to reading the entire bio out loud, right? And I can tell you why. Because I think it's important for Bahamians to know, mm-hmm. right? That what greatness we have among us. And then it's important for Bahamians to understand that you can make great contributions with little effort, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, little effort because, you know, once you've lived long enough and you've gone through all of the kind of openings up to the soul being that you have as a human being, you gain that wisdom, and with wisdom comes, once the knowledge is there and wisdom comes, then you have knowingness. And the knowingness gives you the ability to actually see, you know, with eyes that comes directly from the heart and the soul.
Yes.
And I think that's where we are losing the connection in this country. We feel that only if you are a parliamentarian or you go up there and participate in parliament for a couple of years, and then you are the honorable or most honorable, this, that, and the other. And we forget those lowly people. I mean, for example, like Clarence Carroll. You know, for whom we get some incredible accolades on his passing. And he was someone who was actually, if anyone should be lying in state, that man should be, because of all the phenomenal things that he has done for the education in this country of ours. And you know, beginning even with me, you know, as he was only 1 year older than me, and he was one grade ahead of me. And in Dedminster, Long Island, in the old age school, he was our monitor. So whenever a teacher had to go in the other corner of the one-room classroom to teach, Clarence Carroll, he conducted the class, and everything he said and did was synonymous to what the teacher was doing and saying. And so, you know, I remember so many admirable things about that man and how he motivated so many of us to go into teaching and to be, well, you know, growing up on Long Island, it is absolutely phenomenal because I have encountered people similar to people who grow up in Long Island, and they have a heart of gold. I mean, they are so accustomed to doing everything for people. The compassion and love and regard that they have for people is absolutely astonishing.
So,
the Clarence Carroll does that, and it just saddens me that his last years, he was basically abandoned by the country.
Yeah.
If it weren't for like close relatives, particularly his son, he probably would have died, you know, totally unseen and unheard of.
Yes.
So I just wanted to put that in there because I think, you know, we have to look at other persons in this country other than those who are politically inclined in order, not that they need it, not even if they need it while they're alive or after they're dead, but the fact is just to hold up people like Clarence Carroll to the nation to say, you know, what an honorable being, what a man of light, what a comparable person to Solomon. So I just want to throw that in about my great friend, Clarence Carroll.
No, man, thank you. And so you caused me to pause on the bio by getting back to the bio, though, people. You all need to hear this. But let me ask you this specific question. How do we convince Bahamians, the majority of us who now live in New Providence, how do we convince Bahamians that we should give, we should think about or give a try to letting family island imagination drive the development of this country? One second, you still there, sir? Say that again for me, Mr. Double.
I'm here. Can you hear me clearly?
I can hear you now.
Oh, okay. All right. What that brings to mind, you know, my growing up on Long Island until I was age 14. And I think during that 14 years, and one of the things I would wish now at my age, going on to be 80, I would wish that I could go back there at age 14 and live with the appreciation that I have now for this incredible country of ours, and particularly for the island on which I grew up until I was 14 years old and I left there to go to Nassau to get a job, to send money and stuff back to my grandparents on Long Island in order for them to live. And I remember the generosity of my grandparents. I grew up with them. You know, my mother had me when I was 17 years old, and, you know, she had a relationship with a training pilot in the Royal Air Force. He was from Northwest Africa, and he died in a plane crash in New Providence. And so, you know, she was left alone with me. And so, you know, she took me to Long Island at 9 months old to grow up with my grandparents. You know, I give God eternal grace and thanks for my having that experience up until that island with my grandparents, who were absolutely incredible, fascinating people. And they had 10 children themselves. They took me in to grow up with the last three children, Harry, Marina, and Patrick. Patrick, who's the only one alive now, and he's my brother, Pat, who's a deacon on Long Island.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we had this incredible grace of gratuity and thankfulness all the time.
Yeah.
And being on time, like this whole nonsense about Bahamian time, that's a bunch of foolishness. My grandmother, if you want 2 hours early for church, she considered you late. You can still hear me because I might be cutting off.
No, I can hear you.
Okay, so that upbringing from my grandmother, who had a heart of gold, and I mean, I have to tell you this because every time I think about it, I have to laugh because my grandmother, because she always anticipated the second coming of Christ, and every time she saw a cloud that had a face in it, she said, she would call us immediately, come children, Jesus is coming. And So, you know, we did that so many times. And every time we took our grandmother seriously because we thought, sure, Jesus was coming in the second coming.
Yes, sir.
And then on occasion, don't let a cloud have a face and then a beard, because that certainly was, if not the second coming, the third coming. And so, you know, those kind of religious attachment that my grandmother had, and the generosity of her heart. You know, we went out in the sound and we grabbed a couple of fish and we had more than we needed for a meal. She would say, boy, take this down to your Uncle Junior. So take this down to Auntie Gladys. You know, they don't have anyone to go out here grubbing in the mud to get some grunts or great snappers. And so that ideal, and then, you know, being attached to the land and being attached to the sea and depending upon those two entities, that's what drove me in to become an environmentalist in heart, to make sure that we can secure the abundance of our beauty and the grace of our nation for future generations. We owe it to them. We're only borrowing it from them.
Yes.
And, you know, I shame on anyone who wants to give it away or allow it to be, you know, cast aside and polluted and so forth. And we got to come to that understanding because you have to have that grace of an upbringing. And I would say the people probably who grew up on the islands, we had that. Because when you had to leave the island at 14 because there was no more school and you came to Nassau to work, you had an appreciation. And only because I had, you know, priest friends and people in the church in Nassau, they said, boy, you know, you got some intelligence. You got to go to high school. Mm-hmm. And that was 2 years after I worked.
Wow.
And so I started high school at 16 years old. Wow. And I went to St. Augustine's. They took me in and they said, you know, back in those days we had grades, forms 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And they said, you're too old for form 1, you're too old for form 2, so you got to go in form 3. And I had to go in that grade and I had to compete with all the things like Keith Duncombe and Mr. Adderley and all these people who became lawyers and judges and all the rest. Mm-hmm. I don't know to this day, Aaron, how I did it. But I think simply the heart that grew in me up until age 14 allowed me to do anything that I put my mind to in terms of fighting for the rights of people. And I simply because of the people that need to recognize that they are valuable in this country and know to be cast aside. And I didn't just do that here. I did that in university when I was in Canada. I did that in university when I was in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. I did that when I was in a monastery in St. John's in Minnesota. And I did that at St. Augustine's College. I did that at King's College. So where I went, that was inbred in me by those phenomenal grandparents and my older sisters or what I aunts and uncles. I knew how to operate and what was important in life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think about my time spent in the Family Islands, from my first summer camp in Camp Abaco, I think it was Camp Hope, you know, to my last camping experience at 18 at the Camp Simonette, the Methodist Summer Youth Program, and how that entrenchment in Family Island community and living really can shift. Like you say, it shifts the heart of a Nassau child. Mm-hmm. You know, it could be a great experience. But let's get to this bio. Because all of the passion and love that you have for the country and the people of the country, I could see in this bio, and I want Bahamians to hear it. Mr. Joseph Darvill is a founding member and past president of the Bahamas Counselors Association, past president of the Bahamas Mental Health Association, and the Grand Bahama Mental Health Association. A founding member and a past president and presently vice president of the Grand Bahama Human Rights Association, that's Rights Bahamas, and a founding member and past co-chairman of the Bahamas National Drug Council, a founding member of the Caribbean Human Rights Network, past vice president of the Caribbean Federation of Mental Health, an administrative vice president of the Freeport YMCA. You were also a past vice president of the Bahamas Union of Teachers and taught at the great Red Machine SAC and the equally great QC Comets, where he was also a guidance counselor, a teacher of French and English, and a senior school coordinator, and a principal of Grand Bahama Catholic High School from 1977 to 1997. You were also an advanced master teacher in Reiki training a natural energy healing method, as well as a teacher of transcendental meditation and the science of creative intelligence. I can pause here. I ain't even going into the awards yet, Mr. Darville. But I want to talk about just briefly your experience working with the mental health community and with mental health service advocacy, right?
Yes, yes. Well, in that particular regard, you know, I had some really incredible colleagues, and one of the doctors who was a psychiatrist worked here, and then another layperson. And back in those days, I mean, we had an incredible organization going, and we met regularly to discuss how we would deal with people who had mental problems, particularly on Grand Bahama. We had meetings in the Caribbean area, and they were so impressed with, you know, our delegation. I think it was in Trinidad when we went there. You know, they wanted one of us to head up an organization for the Caribbean, the Mental Health Association in the Caribbean area. Mm-hmm. And that's how I became intimately involved in that particular regard. And so that worked for a number of years until, you know, I had so many commitments, I couldn't carry it on any longer. And but then, you know, in all of these organizations, the period of time that I was privileged and inspired to work with them, whenever it was the opportunity to leave them, it was in order to go into another area where I not felt that I was needed, but it was dawned upon me, inspired in me, that I needed in another realm. And so that's how, you know, I had so many different situations there. And not that I actually personally, Joe Darville, needed to be in them, but I saw where they were needed. And for simple, for example, now as being the president of the Grand Bahama Humane Society, you know, that is a need because I am the only person of color in that whole organization running it, and I'm the only male. And, you know, I don't know how I got involved there, but the fact is, even being there, and just coming out of a very incredible meeting yesterday with some of the head honchos in Grand Bahama, I know now, which I probably didn't realize before, what is my role in that particular regard. So in all of these situations, it just came about, it just happened naturally. Mm-hmm. And you know, God gave me the grace to be able to function at an appreciable level in order to do the work in these particular organizations. And so that has been, and I think the inspiration, the fact that about the environmental aspects, and, you know I was in Bahama for a particular purpose. And I want to say this because, you know, I still cry shame upon administrations over the last 25 or 30 years who have allowed the deterioration of one area on Grand Bahama. And that is the one that was impacted by petrochemicals and mm-hmm. In the Pindus Point, Hawksville, what do you call the other areas in there. And I know why I came here, but when I came here to Grand Bahama and I serve as principal, every morning at 6 o'clock, I had to go down to Hawksville to open up the windows and the doors to air out the classrooms because of all the fumes emanating from the oil refinery company, the power company, the three chemical companies that were operating, pharmaceutical companies, rather. And, you know, that, and so I did a one-man demonstration in front of these companies, mm-hmm. and in order to bring attention to what was happening there, because every week for about 1 or 2 days, particularly in the winter times when the wind was coming from that direction, we had to let the kids out of school, whether it was Lewis had primary, Hawksville High or Catholic High. We were all in the area. You know, we were built outside the walls because those were the schools that were catering to the natives, you mm-hmm. know, who were only allowed to come into Freeport proper during the daytime to work. And so mostly they were living outside the walls of Freeport. And a lot of people don't even know that to this day. And so that's why those schools were put out there. There were a couple of schools built in the Freeport proper, and they catered mostly to the white population or to the foreign population. Mm-hmm. All the others were, you know, out there in that area, Hawksville, which are Adventist Point Hunters, and then in 8 Mile Rock and West Bend. You can still hear me?
Yes, sir. I can still hear you.
I'm saying that to say this, that, you know, I worked out there and I demonstrated, and finally the teachers and the students I involved, because I was fighting not only the Grand Bahama Port Authority, the power company, the three chemical companies, but also my own Catholic Board of Education, who thought that I was instigating the situation, until one day I got a call from the primary school, and the principal there said, Mr. Dower, please come. I don't know what to do. She said to me that 35 of our students are falling out. They can't breathe because of all the polluted air coming into that area.
Yeah.
So I went over there, and I told her right away to call the principals at the Grand Mount Port Authority, which would have been Sir Jack Hayward, Edward St. George, and those, and also to call the ambulances. And she did, and soon after I got there, the ambulances came. Back in those days, we had 5 ambulances operating. And so they came, and they transported 35 students to the Rand Memorial Hospital. And then I got into a pitch verbal battle with my great-to-be afterwards friend, Edward St. George. And he accused me of instigating it and so forth and so on. And so we almost came to a fist fight. And then his beloved wife, Henrietta, intervened. And she said, looked directly into Edward's face. She said, Edward, if you don't want to listen to Joe Dowell, you don't realize it, why don't you go to the hospital and see what happened to those children?
Mm-hmm.
So in the evening, I like to tell this story because, you know, Edward came, one of my greatest allies in terms of relocating the schools out of that area.
Mm-hmm.
So he calls me on the phone that evening, and he said, Joe, I am directed by Henny, he's a caller Henny, to call you to apologize for my behavior over at Hawksville Primary School this morning. He said, but I'm calling on my behalf, too, to apologize for my behavior. He said, because when I went down to the hospital to check on those children, there were still 17 of them who were still on ventilators trying to clear their lungs of polluted air.
Wow.
And so, you know, that was the clinch. And so he and I became intimately connected in terms of what should be done with that environment. He called me about a week afterwards, and he said, Joe, come to have something to show you. So he calls me, and he said, listen here, I got these pieces of land. If you want to, you could relocate your school, Grand Bahama Catholic High School. So he said, he showed me a couple areas, and the areas, two of the areas were too close to all the other schools, and I said that would be, you know, confusion and traffic jams and all of that. So he showed me one out on another route. He said, here's a 24.5-acre piece of land. You could have this particular land. And I said, what? I said, sure. So the next same day, I called the bishop, Bishop Burke. I said, please come down. We need to pay the dollar to get possession of this land. And that's how Catholic High was relocated from that area. And to say, Aaron,
yes,
that one grade that went to school there,
yes,
out of that grade that was in the late 80s, 14 of them have predeceased me. And 12 of them died as a result of pollution from industrial pollution.
And these were your students?
They were my students.
Yes.
And God only knows. And I don't hesitate to say it. I want to say it publicly because this is not no imagination. I was subjected to the foulest air when I had to go out there in the mornings in time to open up those schools. So back in 2010, I came down with some serious problem.
Respiratory?
Urological problems. Okay. I went over to the hospital in Florida.
Yes, sir.
And they said I had enormous, growth inside my bladder.
Yes.
But I'm not hesitant to say it because I was peeing blood for like 3 months, and I thought it's because I was drinking all this nice juice, like carrot juice, so I thought my pee was colored by that.
Ah, okay.
And
wow.
So when they removed it from my bladder, they came to the room after they got the biopsies of it and stuff, and they said, hey, Mr. Dower, he said, the two urologists came in, and he said, listen, he said, you smoked all your life, eh? I said, no, I've never had a cigarette in my mouth. They said, well, then you worked in an industrial area, in an industrial plant. I said, no, but I said, I had a school there. I was principal there for many years. They said, oh, that's it, because that this cancer is only formed from either smoking a lifetime or by industrial pollution.
Wow.
And that's the verification. And then one young lady, she became a manager of one of the Burger Kings here in Freeport. She called me one day. She had someone call me and ask me to come to her place.
Right.
She was one who was kind of well off, so she had gone to Florida, and she was attended to by many doctors, cancer doctors over there. And if she had all of the documents or the reports from the doctors laid out on the table. She said, Mr. D, I call you because I want you to look at these. She said, I know how you've been fighting to get our schools out of that area. And so she said, and every said that heart cancer that was killing her, because that was a week before she died. Every doctor said she was dying because of industrial pollution.
Mm-hmm.
She lived in Pindus Point. She went to Catholic High, so she lived and went to school in that area. And yet, our governments in the last years have turned a blind eye to that situation. And so when Edward St. George, agreed for the movement of the schools, and I met with him and Jack Hayward. A lot of people don't know this, and I don't broadcast it, but I like it for it to be known now.
Mm-hmm.
That I fought with them. I said, okay, now you've allowed Catholic High to move because we raised enough money, and the Port Divers did give us a good amount of money to build the best playing field on Grand Bahama. And so I said, you have to see to it that all of the schools are removed out of that area.
Mm-hmm.
And both of them said, Joe, we are going to get it done. And so that's how Hawksville High, Hawksville Primary, Lewis Yard Primary were moved to that area. They moved Lewis Yard Primary up at the old Catholic grade school out there, St. Vincent de Paul, and because that had closed. And then all of the primary schools and the high school there, they built schools in Freeport, three schools, Jack Hayward High St. Edward's High and Mary Patricia. So they moved all the students out of there. And then, of course, they divided Hawksville Jack Hayward High into two schools, junior and high. And now, because Catholic High had amalgamated with Mary Starr, because of downturn in the economy and parents not being able to afford, private education, the government is renting the Catholic High School that I had built on those 24 acres of land. I don't need it, and I try to turn it down. I have yet to get a word of thanks from the Catholic Board of Education in terms, I shouldn't say that, because Sister Mary, the Maydeen Russell, before she died, and then Sister Mary Benedict, they were absolutely ecstatic that I was able to get that. But officially, I haven't seen one thing from them to say, thank you, Joe Dowell. Not that I need it. But the fact is, if I were another person, I probably would need it. I don't need thanks from anything that I do. So let it be. Let it be. Anyway, let me pause there, see if you have another question. But I wanted to get that in there because I think history has to be written with these particular facts in mind.
But listen,
and now I rejoice when I go to Jack Hayward High, Sister Mary Patricia High, St. George's High, and see the work that happened because someone was fool enough to put his reputation online to advocate for that. I just want to say that.
Well, I want to say thank you for being fool enough to put your reputation online to advocate on behalf of all those young people, vulnerable people, and people, adults, circumstances, right? And because, you know, we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of years of ancestral history for many people, right?
Yeah, man.
And this idea that we're going to just let industry drive people out of their ancestral homes is problematic. So I want to ask you, I want to ask you this quick question. Do we have any models to determine how do we drive development on our islands, but balance it with the obligation to protect and preserve the environment?
Well, I think that's an easy question to answer, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
We have sufficient enlightened people in this country who know what it is, and particularly those who are in the environmental protection areas, and even those who are afraid to speak out, because I speak to many, even some in government, who are completely 100% in concert with the environmental groups, but they are afraid to speak because of political victimization. And that is so sad. You know, I've never been afraid to stand up for my people. And even, you know, when we fought Fred, particularly Fred Smith and myself and a couple other people, to save Jaws Beach for Bahamians in terms of the devastation that NIGAD was causing there. You know, there was a contract taken out on us to have both of us killed along with two other people. I could speak for Fred and I because, FBI agents came here specifically to meet with us and to offer to provide protection for us. I refused it outright. I said, I will not be scared in my life. I said, they want to take my life. That's fine, but I'll come back and hide the hell out of them.
Oh, boy, that's my backup plan, too, sir. That's my backup plan, too.
So there are, but we have to get over this demonic possession of our people that only is count in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and we have, you know, I must drop this in here because I hope that some of them are listening and they would change their MO. But I am so disappointed in all those young people who went into parliament in the last election, be they on the FNM side or be they on the PLP side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, they have stooped to the most stupid, asinine aspect of governance that I've ever imagined. And I don't know what happened to them. And then you got these people who go into parliament and they make all this noise and so forth, and they're not elected in the following election. And you don't hear diddly squat from them. I think that's a Long Island expression, diddly squat.
Mm-hmm.
You don't hear anything from them anymore. Like they've died, they've gone. You know, they've gotten their pension and all of this mm-hmm. stuff from government and so forth. They're in there for a couple of years and they enrich themselves, some of them, you know, to the detriment of the people. And then they're gone. And so these people who have this concern for the environment, we have incredible. I mean, I can think of people like Kazarina McKinney.
Lambert, yes.
Sam Duncan, mm-hmm. you know, Rashima Ingram, who mm-hmm. works now with Save the Bays and Waterkeepers Bahamas. And even myself, you know, we have this intuitive knowledge about the sanctity. You know, if I was on video, I'm right out here by Taino Beach now, looking out over the most precious ocean. And you know something? We have been declared as having the cleanest air on the planet. You know mm-hmm. that, right?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And we want to keep our ocean the cleanest ocean. So why would we have a dream of drilling for oil in our archipelagic waters or allowing oil refinery to be here and mm-hmm. so forth? God gave us some really good signs, Aaron. We have incredible architects. We have engineers in this country. And they, along with the environmental group, can tell us exactly how to build in our country, mm-hmm. where to build, and so forth. And I've been advocating for years. When I first came to Grand Bahama in 1976, we're doing, as you know, back in those days, you could not find a Bahamian dollar in Grand Bahama. They were all U.S. dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all drug money. But back in those days, they said $7 out of 10 came from drug trade.
More dollars than cents, Mr. Darville. More dollars than cents. I said, we had more dollars than cents back then. But Mr. Darville, we're right out of time, and my guest co-host has a comment for you.
Well,
okay, go ahead.
Morning, Uncle Joe. I'm sure you remember me, this Darren here, but I just want to say thank you to you.
Oh, that's what you tried to reach me earlier.
Yeah, yes, sir, yes, sir.
Oh, my God, how you doing, my brother?
It's all good, Uncle Joe, it's all good. I just want to thank you so much for your advocacy. You've always been an example for myself and so many others to follow, and believe me, my daughter will know your name for generations to come. Her generations will know your name. Thank you so much, Uncle Joe.
Okay, thank you all, Aaron. Oh, my God. Thank you, my brother. God bless you, and God bless the work that you're doing.
I think of you often.
Mr. Darville.
Especially have a good times down and defending our people when we went.
Yes,
okay?
Sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Mr. Darville, I have to have you back on because we didn't get to any of the questions.
Oh, we haven't covered half because I want to talk about our ocean and how to protect it.
Yes, sir.
And also about our land, and I want to talk about how we owe it to our young people to provide for them crown land, because 90% of our young Bahamians don't own anything. And if you didn't own anything on Long Island, you could not go and ask the hand of the daughter of someone down in Mangrove Bush.
That's
you
right.
You have to have land, and you have to have a building up the Bell Course. Man. That's how we valued property in the islands.
Yes, sir.
God bless you all. Love you all. Keep up the great work.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
Listen, thank you guys for tuning into the show. I've got two quick texts. The first text says, so that is why so many people are dying in Grand Bahama. Well, I'm glad that we got this snapshot of the environmental advocacy history in Grand Bahama to begin answering that question. My last text of the day, Miss Green, I'm going to produce a minimum of 500 watermelons this season. Well, congratulations to you, because your Bahamian people are going to need watermelon this season to stay hydrated. If you didn't know, watermelon is the thing to keep you this summer. So find that buddy, because you're going to need some of that watermelon. And I'm going to go pay off this little bill I have with the sun, because that's why she mad with me and, by extension, all of y'all. Got to get to the bank, people. You've been tuned into On the Clock with Aaron Green. This is 96.9 FM, Guardian Radio. Have a great day, Bahamas, because you know Levon Miller and Unleashed is up next. Have a great day.